Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
It's March 19th, 1882, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
The Sagrada Familia is well known as Antoni Gaudí's magnum opus, but when the cornerstone of the Grand Cathedral was being laid in Barcelona, today in history in 1882, it actually had a different architect. Fortunately, that guy didn't last very long, and soon a new blueprint was being drawn up with all the organic facades and leaning colonnades and wildly ambitious Art Nouveau forms we know today. Though this radical new design somewhat scuppered the early hopes that the building would be completed within a decade.
I love that Gaudi always just twisted the brief to his own shtick.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even when you look at his private work, it's like, you want a big house, yeah, with an atrium, sure, yeah. So a giant fish made of glass?
Do yeah, that. Massive heads? How about that? Yeah.
Well, and it's especially funny when you consider how he came to be involved in the project, which was that there were disagreements between the association who were funding it and the original architect, who, and the original designer, in fairness, a guy called Francisco de Paula del Villar. He'd been hired by the Association of the Devo of St. Joseph, and the day before the one-year anniversary of the groundbreaking, he quit or was pushed. And it turns out that the sticking point was arguments over budget. Now, consider that what was going to happen was that they were going to continue to build this cathedral for another 140 years. Apparently, one of the major bones of contention was that Villar wanted solid stone pillars and the committee wanted hollow ones filled with rubble as it was cheaper.
Also, it's hilarious that Villar had originally waived his fee completely. So that must have made him a fairly tempting option for like the committee when they were looking around for who their architect was going to be. But then they looked for a new architect and found Gaudi, aged then just 31, and thought, this guy is new, he's young, he's keen, and he's not going to cost very much. And as we all know, this then became this massively expensive, long-term, you know, century and a bit long production. So that sort of blew up in their face.
But it's not like, as I was suggesting, he didn't have a very distinctive style. I mean, you've got to give them credit, I think, for doing such a massive pivot on this. Mm. And allowing him to express himself creatively through this kind of organic-looking structure that he had kind of rising out of the ground.
Yeah.
Which, you know, people have compared to all kinds of wacky stuff. You know, some people say it looks like a cartoon, like something from Dr. Seuss. Some people say it looks like an underwater forest. That's a mad concept when the idea, the brief, is Sagrada Familia. We're paying tribute to the Holy Family, right? This is all about Jesus and Mary and Joseph. It's kind of, I mean, they must have really believed, correctly, but they must have really believed in his devout Catholicism to allow him to sort of hijack it, because as has become the case, it's kind of as much about his ego, isn't it? Come and see Gaudi's masterpiece, as it is anything to do with Jesus, and always will be. I don't know how they didn't know that just from the blueprints.
Well, the original inspiration had come about from a visit by one of the members, actually the leader of this association that Rebecca mentioned. His name was Josep Maria Bocabella y Verdaguer, and he had gone on a visit to Rome to go and give Pope Pius IX a silver image of the Holy Family. And on his way back, he stopped off at the Sanctuary of the Holy House in Loreto. And this was a building that was meant to enshrine the home where, according to tradition, the Holy Family lived. And then it was moved from Nazareth to this Italian town in the 13th century. And, you know, that's where it lives now. Anyway, Bocabella thought that this whole thing was very impressive. And he basically got back to Barcelona and said, I'd like to build something like that. And that was what he had in his mind when the project began. Instead, the first project was very much this sort of neo-Gothic construction. Mm. And then what he ended up with, once he had appointed Gaudi, Gaudi, and who, by the way, he came to because he'd had a dream that the architect of his fantasies would be a guy with blue eyes, like piercing blue eyes, and Gaudi had that.
Ginger hair and blue eyes.
Yeah, and he was
and he
like...
he saw him, and he was like, you're the guy from my dream.
Fine, you've never made anything except street lamps, whatever, so, you know, come and do this massive project.
Gaudi was like, I need to tell you something about how long this is going to take. He's like, don't worry.
I guy. But then, you know, gave him the freedom to do all of this incredible stuff. You know, the building that he was putting together aimed to be like the complete heavens and earth, all incorporated into this structure. Endless saints, you know, biblical scenes, symbols, inscriptions, seashells, reptiles, birds, flowers, fruit, everything. Just everything was meant to be in this building, which is why when you go there, oh my God, it is sensory overload.
It's
just
busy,
like,
but also it tells the story, right? So I mean, spoiler, but the surviving wall from Gaudi's original construction is the Nativity Wall, which tells the story. And it also, amongst all this madness, is actually telling the stories from the Bible. It's the idea was you could be from a poor family, you could be illiterate, and you could understand from looking at what I've created what the story of Jesus is. Mm. I mean, it does fail. Because instead you just look at it and go, what is this?
It's melting and falling on you. That's your first thought. But still, it's such a weird looking thing. I found this quote from Salvador Dali, who was a fan of it, but he said, those who...
It would be weird if Salvador Dali was like, whoa, that's odd.
That's, yeah, that's a bit much.
Do you know what's art? Clear linear lines.
No, so what he said was, those who have not tasted his superbly creative bad taste are traitors.
Well, it's pre-modern is what it is, isn't it? Like, this is the end of the 19th century, so we haven't got modernism yet. But it's like, I'll do a Gothic cathedral, but I'll do it in a way that will feel appropriate to this next new modern century. That's what's going on, isn't it? Mm. And that's why when it's taken so long to build, you've essentially got the idea of like a medieval cathedral that takes hundreds of years to build and is a big team effort, but one that looks like it's appropriate for the modern era.
He did become very obsessed with the project as well. You know, easy to imagine how he might become consumed by this. But I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but it is ironic that the church is designed as a tribute to the Holy Family, and Gaudi had no known romances. Apparently he was once in love. We have like one suggestion that there was once a woman he was in love with. And when he had come on board the project, of course, he was much younger then, and, you know, he was 31. He was known as a kind of a fine living, dandyish kind of a figure. But over the years, he became more and more intense, religious, and lived an ever more frugal lifestyle to the point that when he was killed in 1926 at the age of 73 after being hit by a tram, he was initially mistaken for a homeless man because of his clothing.
And he got hit by that tram because he was completely obsessed with his work. Like, that's what he was thinking about. He literally wasn't looking, you know, when he crossed the road, because he was thinking single-mindedly about that all the time.
Yeah, and he was wearing... this is like a real life version of that thing your parents tell you, that make sure you're wearing nice underpants in case you get hit by a tram. Well, Gaudi was it, because they found him to be wearing underpants held together by safety pins as part of this new sort of extreme asceticism that he'd adopted as he went along, where he was eating breakfasts of burnt toast and lunches of lettuce dipped in milk, like just this kind of total renunciation of himself and his public appearance. He used to wear these old suits that were so rancid that they were tinged with green mold. So he was a bit of a sight by the end, I'm afraid.
So... I feel like, you know, in the length of time we have, let's skip over the politics of the next few decades. I'm sure we'll return to it in another episode. We've got time to do the Spanish Civil War some other time. But basically, leftists versus fascists, they end up trashing what was left of the Sagrada Familia. So, like, there was a wall that Gaudi had built, as we said, the Nativity Wall. But his plans and his models and the things that he wanted to do beyond the crypt where he ended up being buried all got destroyed. But then there's a discussion as we get into the 1950s about what do we do about this? Do we finish the cathedral in the way that we think Gaudi would have liked, but we don't have his models anymore because they've all been smashed?
Yeah, and future architects did have some material to go on. As you mentioned, there were models that Gaudi had made. He famously preferred making those to doing sketches. And some of those that had been smashed to pieces by vandals during the Spanish Civil War were painstakingly put back together, you know, from fragments. So there were some ideas about what he envisioned for the future. But when construction resumed again was in 1948, and then it didn't pause again until COVID. That's the first time they stopped. And as to where they are now, there were 18 total planned towers. Only one of them was completed at Gaudi's death, the St. Barnabas Tower. As of now, there are still 10 left to go.
Yeah, I saw an estimate suggesting that it would be done by 2026. But I actually wanted to find out which were the longest construction projects. And the top three, according to the result I found, was Petra, which took 850 years. Then the Great Wall of China was in sort of joint first place, and it took 2,000 years, alongside the other one, which took 2,000 years. Do you guys want to take a punt?
2,000 years? I mean, my extension went on, but it wasn't that.
Hint, it's really lame. It shouldn't have taken this long. It's Stonehenge. It's just a bunch of rocks,
you
guys.
Oh, yeah, it's so lame how they magically managed to move all those gigantic pillars with no power whatsoever.
Yeah, I think you've been spoiled. That's a bit
really impressive. Lame. Resident architecture critic Ari McNichol once again.
Insufficiently frou-frou.
This episode first aired last year exclusively to members of Club Retrospectors.
Join today and unlock a new episode this Sunday.
Patreon.com/retrospectors.